Imagine training the most advanced artificial intelligence on the planet. Like technology that is supposed to completely change the future of humanity. And you're doing it using literal farm waste from a field in Topeka, Kansas.
Right, yeah.
Today, we are looking at a system where a pile of discarded hemp stalks is autonomously transformed into the electricity that powers the next generation of AI, completely off the grid,
Yeah.
with zero human intervention.
I mean, it sounds like an absolute contradiction, doesn't it? A total collision of worlds that just shouldn't even be in the same
It
universe.
really does.
You have the absolute bleeding edge of Silicon Valley tech crashing headfirst into, traditional Midwestern agriculture. But it is happening, and it is completely reshaping how we think about infrastructure.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. I'm your host, and our mission today is to explore a company called DeReticular and this incredibly ambitious project they're building, which they call the Sovereign Stack.
Yeah, it's a massive undertaking.
We're going to unpack how they're designing an ecosystem that basically allows AI software agents to autonomously negotiate, buy, and sell physical energy and computer processing power.
Which is wild on its own.
Exactly. And perhaps most surprisingly, we're going to break down the strategic masterstroke of why they chose Shawnee County, Kansas, as the central hub to build, test, and actually recruit top-tier coastal engineering talent for this massive futuristic network.
It's a brilliant move, honestly.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we can even talk about what DeReticular is physically building inside a shipping container in Kansas, we kind of have to understand the new language that machines are using to talk to each other.
We really do, because to grasp what DeReticular is attempting, you have to understand the fundamental paradigm shift happening in computer science right now.
Right.
Up until very recently, AI has been strictly about single-agent task execution. Like, put yourself in the shoes of a normal user. You open a laptop, you type a prompt into a chatbot, and the AI generates an image or writes a line of code.
Yeah, it's a closed loop.
Exactly. The human initiates the action and the machine responds.
Right. I ask for a recipe, it gives me a recipe. End of interaction.
But the frontier we are crossing into now involves multi-agent systems, or MAS. We're moving into a reality where multiple autonomous AI agents discover each other, they negotiate terms, reserve physical capacity, and actually settle financial transactions directly with one another.
Wait, without us?
Completely. No human presses a button. The machines are doing business with machines.
Which is honestly a terrifying and fascinating concept. I mean, if we have networks of machines negotiating over physical, real-world resources like electricity and compute cycles, they need a shared language, right? They can't just make it up on the fly.
No, they need a highly standardized protocol. The industry refers to this as agent-to-agent, or A2A, reservation
Okay,
system.
A2A.
Right. It's the orchestration layer that allows machines to engage in autonomous commerce, and it's structured in a very specific five-layer stack.
Let's break down this stack because understanding the nuts and bolts here is crucial for you listening. Let's start at the absolute bottom. Layer one is the transport and hardware layer.
Yep.
I know this involves basic internet protocols like HTTPS for moving data packets, but there's a physical component here that the documentation emphasizes heavily, something called TPM 2.0 oracles. What is that?
So this is where the digital world binds to the physical world, which is, frankly, notoriously difficult to do securely.
I can imagine.
TPM stands for Trusted Platform Module. It is a physical, secure crypto processor chip that's permanently installed on a motherboard.
Wait, so it's not a software program, it's a literal piece of physical metal and silicon.
Yes. Think about the core problem of an autonomous machine economy. If an AI agent halfway across the world pays a generator in Kansas to turn on and supply power, how does it know the generator actually turned on?
Right, can't just look through a window.
Exactly. The software could just lie and say, "Yep, I did the work, send the money." The TPM 2.0 Oracle prevents that. When the physical sensor on the generator registers that, say, 100 kilowatt hours of electricity were produced, the TPM chip uses a burned-in cryptographic key to sign a mathematical proof of that exact event.
Oh, wow. So the hardware itself is acting as an incorruptible notary public.
That is a perfect way to describe it. It creates an unforgeable hardware signature proving the physical action occurred. It forces reality and the digital record to actually match.
That makes total sense because you can't have a machine economy if the machines can just scam each other.
Exactly.
Okay, so moving up the stack, Layer 2 is tool connectivity. We're looking at things like Anthropic's Model Context Protocol, or MCP.
Right, and MCP is incredibly important for what it does, but you have to understand its limitations. It is a one-to-one vertical binding.
Meaning what, practically?
Meaning, it's how an individual AI agent talks to its own internal tools. If you have an AI agent functioning as a financial analyst, the MCP is the protocol that allows that agent to securely reach into your company's private database, pull a spreadsheet, and read it.
Okay, so it connects the brain to the hand.
Yes, but, and this is the key distinction, MCP does not allow that AI brain to talk to another AI brain outside of its network.
Ah, I see. So it's vertically integrated but completely isolated.
Exactly.
Which brings us to layer 3, the interagent protocol, the horizontal layer. This is where Google's open standard A2A comes into play, or Fetch.ai's autonomous economic agents. But how do these bots actually find each other in the wild?
Through a brilliantly simple discovery mechanism, actually. An agent publishes its identity, its specific capabilities, and its general pricing through a standardized file known as an agent card.
Okay.
And this card is hosted at a highly predictable web directory, usually ending in /.well-known/agent.json.
Okay, so if I'm an AI agent, and my human owner gave me a task that requires massive processing power that I just don't have, I essentially scan the internet for these specific agent.json files.
That's the idea.
It's like I'm reading digital billboards or like an automated LinkedIn to find a bot that does have the power I need.
Yeah, it is entirely a programmatic discovery. You parse the agent card, you see the capabilities, and you verify the identity. But finding the right agent is only the introduction.
Right, they still have to make a deal.
Exactly. Once Agent A finds Agent B, they have to agree on terms. And that brings us to the most complex part of the stack, layer 4, which is negotiation and contracts.
This is where I need you to slow down and really explain the mechanics to me. Because the documentation uses a phrase that sounds like pure science fiction Bayesian utility negotiating agents.
It does sound like sci-fi, yeah.
I know in the old days of software, if I wanted to use an API, there was just a fixed price on a website. I pay a fraction of a cent, I get the data. What is a Bayesian utility negotiating agent doing differently?
Well, in a fixed price model, the market is static. But in the physical world of energy and compute power, supply and demand fluctuate by the millisecond.
Right.
So Bayesian utility agents don't use fixed prices. They use dynamic probability to, for lack of a better term, haggle.
But wait, how do two math equations haggle?
Think of it like a hyper-accelerated game of poker.
Yeah.
When you play poker, you don't know the other player's cards, but you watch their behavior.
Okay, yeah. Like how fast they bet, how much they raise.
Exactly. And you use Bayesian updating. You mathematically update the probability of what is in their hand based on that new evidence.
Okay, I'm following the poker analogy. But how does a bot actually do that?
The agent is constantly evaluating its own internal pressures. Variables like time decay, like how urgently does my task need to be finished? It looks at its remaining inventory and local grid demand. Then it sends an initial micro offer to the other bot.
And then it waits for a response.
Yes. And based on the counter offer and even the millisecond delay in the response, the agent updates its internal mathematical model to deduce the absolute highest price the other bot is willing to pay, or the lowest price it will accept.
Whoa. Time out. So they are actively trying to deduce the other bot's pain threshold.
Yes. They are calculating the counterparty's reservation price based on real-time game theory.
But wait, if these bots are negotiating on the open market, representing massive corporations, wouldn't that expose their underlying business strategies?
You would think so, yeah.
I mean, if I'm a competitor, couldn't I just build a bot to constantly negotiate with your bot just to reverse engineer what your profit margins are?
You've identified the exact vulnerability that would normally prevent corporations from participating in an open A2A market. And that is why layer 4 utilizes something called zero-knowledge constraint verification.
Break that down for me like I'm 5. If I have zero knowledge, what exactly am I verifying?
Okay, think of a bouncer at a bar. The bouncer needs to know you are over 21. Normally, you hand them your driver's license. But by doing that, you also reveal your home address, your exact birth date, your height, and your weight.
Right, you're giving away a ton of stuff.
You give away surplus private information just to prove a single binary fact.
Okay, so how does the bot avoid that?
A zero-knowledge proof is like handing the bouncer a mathematically certified card that simply says true for the condition of being over 21 without revealing a single other detail.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In the A2A network, an agent can mathematically prove to the other bot, hey, I have the capital to pay for this transaction, or I have the physical GPU capacity available without ever revealing its bank balance, its total server count, or its baseline operating costs.
Yeah, it is incredible.
It proves the condition is met without showing the underlying data.
Okay, so they find each other, they deduce the best price using Bayesian poker, and they prove they're good for the deal without showing their hands. Which takes us to the final step. Layer 5, settlement and escrow. The deal is struck. So how does the money
through autonomous smart contracts. The documentation mentions primitives like BY 402 and ERC 8183. When the negotiation concludes, the buyer agent locks its digital funds into a cryptographic escrow on a blockchain ledger.
So it's not like Venmo where the money just shoots over immediately.
No, it's more like a mechanical lockbox with two keys. The buyer puts the money in the box and locks their side. At that exact microsecond, the seller agent physically partitions and reserves the required hardware, say, 16 hours of GPU processing time.
So the friends are held in state.
Yes. And this loops us all the way back to layer one, the TPM 2.0 hardware oracle we talked about.
Exactly.
The funds in that lockbox cannot be released until the TPM 2.0 chip cryptographically signs a message proving the 16 hours of GPU work was completely executed.
Oh, that's so cool.
Once that hardware signature hits the ledger, the contract state transitions to completed, the lockbox opens, and the payment is routed to the seller's treasury. And this entire life cycle discovery, negotiation, escrow, execution, and settlement happens in fractions of a second.
Okay, so we've established this mind-bending software stack. But here's the massive question. Why do we need it? Like, why go through the trouble of building Bayesian negotiating bots just to secure computing power?
It's a fair question.
And this brings us right to the physical bottleneck of the modern AI boom. We have the software, but we are quite literally running out of the power to run it.
We are hitting the absolute limits of modern infrastructure. People really underestimate the physical weight of artificial intelligence.
Right.
Training a large language model doesn't just happen in the ether, you know. It requires massive, concentrated clusters of thousands of GPUs running at maximum thermal capacity for months. The electricity required is just staggering.
And the sources introduce Dureticular's founder, Michael Knoll, who identifies the core structural issue here. He talks about the problem with centralized linear infrastructure, what he calls the line, and why we need to move to something he terms spherical resilience.
Right.
What exactly does he mean by the line?
So the line is the bedrock of industrialization. It's the Newtonian way we've built the power grid for over a century. You build a massive power plant far away from the city, and you string high voltage transmission lines in a linear path to a substation and then down to a building.
So it's very predictable.
Right. It assumes infinite generation capacity on one end and completely predictable consumption on the other.
But AI isn't predictable consumption.
Not at all. The power density required by a modern AI data center is magnitudes higher than a traditional office building or even a traditional internet server farm.
So what happens when they try to plug in?
Well, if you're a major tech company today and you want to build a new AI data center, you can't just buy land and plug it into the line. You hit a bureaucratic and physical roadblock known as the permitting wall.
Let's really put this into perspective for you listening. Put yourself in the shoes of a massive cloud computing provider. You have hundreds of millions of dollars in venture capital. You have shipping containers full of the most advanced computer chips on Earth sitting on a loading dock ready to go.
Yeah.
You want to build a massive data center to train the next generation of AI. But when you go to the local utility company to get the permits, what do they actually tell you?
They look at the grid interconnection queue and tell you that the transmission lines simply cannot handle the load you are asking for. They might say, hey, we'd love to have your business, but you have to wait 5 to 7 years for us to upgrade the substations and transmission lines before you can plug in.
7 years. I mean, in the tech world, 7 years is a geologic era. In 7 years, the chips you bought will be entirely obsolete.
It is a complete non-starter for the industry. The aging centralized grid is just fracturing under the weight of AI demand. And this is exactly why Dureticular is abandoning the line for spherical resilience.
Makes sense.
If you are blocked from tapping into the centralized grid, the only alternative is to generate the massive amounts of power you need locally, completely off the grid.
You essentially have to become your own utility company.
Yes. And to manage an off-grid environment that is constantly balancing local power generation with high-intensity compute loads, Dereticular built their flagship software platform, which they call RIOS.
The Rural Infrastructure Operating System.
Mm.
So how does RIOS actually function in the real world? Like, if I have a dereticular node set up somewhere out in the country, completely severed from the main power grid, what is RIOS doing?
RIOS serves as the localized brain, the A2A node authority. Think of it as the ultimate dispatcher. RIOS exposes that standard agent card to the global internet. When an external enterprise, say, a logistics company in Chicago, needs to run heavy AI calculations, their external agent pings the RIOS endpoint to discover what capacity is available at this rural node.
So RIOS basically answers the door.
It answers the door, but it also manages the entire house. RIOS coordinates the internal state machines. It constantly monitors exactly how much power is being generated on site at that exact millisecond, what the thermal limits of the cooling systems are, and how much compute capacity is sitting idle.
Wow, it's juggling a lot.
It is. It orchestrates the A2A negotiations to perfectly match that external Chicago demand with its own internal off-grid supply.
Okay, but this brings up an incredibly obvious physical engineering problem. If dereticular is bypassing the traditional power grid, and they're setting up these high-performance compute clusters in rural environments, where in the world are they getting the sheer volume of electricity required to spin up thousands of AI GPUs?
This is where we cross into the realm of radical innovation. They aren't building solar farms or wind turbines, which are notoriously intermittent. They are generating highly reliable baseline power locally using a process called plasma gasification.
And they are fueling this process with something that rural communities have in absolute abundance. The documentation details a partnership through an initiative called Agra Energy. They are taking raw agricultural waste, specifically industrial hemp herd, from a partner called Prairie Band Agriculture.
Right.
But how does a pile of discarded hemp stalks turn into electricity? Are they just like tossing it into an incinerator?
No, and it's really important to understand they aren't just setting the hemp on fire in a furnace. Plasma gasification is an advanced thermal process. You subject the raw biomass, the hemp herd, to extremely high temperatures in a zero oxygen environment using a plasma torch.
Wait, zero oxygen, so it doesn't burn?
Because there is no oxygen, the material doesn't actually burn. Instead, the intense heat breaks the molecular bonds of the waste, converting it into a synthetic gas, or syngas.
So you are molecularly deconstructing farm waste into a combustible gas. That is wild.
Exactly. That syngas is then fed into a generator turbine to produce highly efficient off-grid electricity. And the only byproduct is a solid, carbon-rich material called biochar, which is actually highly valuable as a soil amendment for farmers.
Oh, so it's a closed loop. The farm produces waste, the waste is gasified into electricity to run the data center, and the byproduct goes back into the soil to grow more crops.
It's incredibly efficient.
But the real genius here isn't just the physical loop, right? It's the economic engine running on top of it. The dereticular application calls this the spark spread.
Right, so the spark spread is a legacy term from traditional energy markets. It refers to the arbitrage margin, the difference between the cost of purchasing a fuel, like natural gas, and the wholesale price of the electricity that fuel produces. Dereticular has taken this old-school utility concept and weaponized it for the AI era.
So explain how the A2A agents we talked about earlier execute this spark spread. Like, how do the bots manage the physical gasifier?
You have two distinct A2A agents working in absolute physical tandem. First, you have the Agra Energy agent. Its sole purpose in life is to monitor the plasma gasifier. It looks at the intake of hemp herd, the efficiency of the plasma torch, and it continuously publishes its exact real-time cost to generate 1 kilowatt hour of off-grid power.
And sitting right next to it, digitally speaking, is the edge compute agent.
Yes. The edge compute agent's job is to look outward at the global market. It monitors the global spot price for AI inference. It knows exactly what an external cloud provider is willing to pay right this second to run calculations on their hardware.
So the compute agent is essentially running a real-time arbitrage equation. It evaluates the margin between the local physical cost of making power from hemp waste versus the global digital going rate for AI compute.
Precisely. Let's say it's 2 p.m. and the global demand for AI compute is surging. The margins are incredibly profitable. The compute agent instantly uses A2A protocols to negotiate with the Agra Energy agent. It essentially buys out the power supply. It reserves 100% of the plasma gasifier's energy output, locking it in to run the local GPU clusters at maximum capacity so it can sell that compute time to the global market.
But the beauty of arbitrage is the pivot. right?
Yeah.
What happens if, say, a massive new hyperscale data center comes online halfway across the world, and suddenly the global price for AI compute plummets? The margin just disappears.
Well, if this were a traditional linear data center, they would just eat the loss or idle the machines, wasting potential revenue. But in Dirarticular's ecosystem, the system dynamically pivots.
How so?
If the AI compute margins drop below the profitability threshold, the compute agent automatically uses those same A2A protocols to pivot the physical infrastructure. Instead of running the GPUs, it sells that electricity back to the regional microgrid, or perhaps directly back to the adjacent agricultural processing facilities that might be experiencing peak load demand.
It's constantly shifting states without human intervention. Buying low, selling high. One minute it's selling digital processing power to a tech firm in New York. The next minute it's selling physical electrical power to the tractor facility next door.
It really is remarkable.
And this loops back to that Layer 5 escrow, right? The TPM 2.0 oracle is the only way a remote buyer knows that this hemp-powered generator actually delivered the electricity it promised.
It guarantees trust in a completely trustless, human-free transaction. The hardware verifies the physics, the blockchain verifies the economics.
It is staggering to think about this happening autonomously. But Dirarticular isn't stopping at stationary data centers sitting in a field, are they? The documentation outlines how they are scaling this A2A orchestration to moving vehicles and global networks.
No, they're not stopping there at all. They are expanding the protocol into mobility and logistics through an initiative called Curb Cars.
Okay, curb cars. These are described as off-grid, autonomous electric vehicles operating in rural and industrial corridors. How does a self-driving truck integrate into an AI energy market?
You treat the physical vehicle exactly like a digital agent. The curb car has its own onboard AI agent. This agent monitors battery depletion rates, the current topological route, and the hard deadlines for its cargo delivery.
So it knows exactly what it needs and when.
Exactly. And when the bot determines it will need a recharge to complete its route, it doesn't alert a human dispatcher to look at a map. The curb car AI agent queries the network and uses the Bayesian probability we discussed to negotiate directly with an Agra Energy microgrid agent.
So the truck is haggling with the power plant over the price of a charge while it's literally driving down the highway.
Exactly. It reserves a specific 30-minute charging slot based on its projected arrival time. It locks the transaction via a micropayment escrow.
Wow.
And when the curb car physically pulls into the bay, the charging station physically locks the plug, the TPM 2.0 verifies the current transfer, and the escrow releases the funds. Zero human intervention from the initial realization of low battery all the way through to the physical power transfer.
And if we pull the lens back even further, the scale gets truly planetary with something they call Project Octagon. Dirarticular is building a global mesh network they call Hyphenate. They're establishing eight strategic sovereign nodes globally. The sources specifically mention locations spanning from Uganda to Canada, Kansas, and Arizona.
Project Octagon takes that localized spark spread arbitrage we discussed with the hemp gasifier and applies it on a planetary macroeconomic scale. It enables internode autonomous load balancing.
Walk me through a scenario here. How do these international nodes actually interact? Like you have node one, which the sources note is in Kabong, Uganda, and you have node three, which is located in Topeka, Kansas.
Because the network operates on a peer-to-peer mesh architecture, these nodes can dynamically offload computing tasks to one another based on shifting global variables. Let's say node one in Uganda relies heavily on localized solar arrays.
Okay.
When the sun goes down in Kabong, the local cost of generating power spikes or the available capacity simply drops.
But at that exact moment, the sun is shining in Kansas, or maybe the plasma gasifier in Topeka is running at absolute maximum efficiency because it's the middle of the local harvest season and they have a massive surplus of hemp herd.
Exactly. The AI agent managing the Uganda node constantly recalculates its operating costs. It realizes it is now cheaper and faster to delegate a massive AI training workload across the ocean rather than process it locally.
So it just sends it over.
It uses A2A task messages to package the workload, encrypt it, send it across the Hyphenate to Node 3, have the Topeka GPUs run the calculations using that cheap off-grid gasification energy, and return the completed artifact to Africa.
The workload physically chases the cheapest energy around the globe, traversing time zones dynamically. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the industrial use cases for this are profound. It's not just tech companies routing data. You could have autonomous agricultural supply chains operating on this same protocol.
The implications for physical logistics are massive. Imagine a fleet of autonomous harvesters out in a Midwestern field. Instead of humans coordinating logistics on a whiteboard, the farm equipment agents negotiate directly with the processing plant agents at Prairie Band Ag.
They just book their own appointments.
Yes. They reserve intake slots based on real-time crop yields and transit times. It completely eliminates the physical queue bottlenecks. Instead of a dozen semi-trucks showing up at the processing plant at the same time and idling in the yard for 3 hours, wasting fuel and human capital, the machine agents optimize the logistics autonomously, scheduling exact arrival windows to the minute.
So this brings us to a massive practical question. We've talked about the theory, the software, the global load balancing.
Yeah.
But you have to physically build this somewhere. Project Octagon has a crucial node 3, and as we've mentioned, it's located in Shawnee County, Topeka, Kansas.
Right.
Of all the places on Earth to physically test and build this massive ecosystem, why not Silicon Valley? Why not Austin, Texas? Why did Deer Reticular choose Topeka?
Well, to answer that, we really have to look past the coastal bias of the tech industry and look at the actual engineering requirements of building physical infrastructure. You simply can't build a plasma gasifier in a loft in San Francisco.
I mean, your landlord probably wouldn't be thrilled.
Exactly. You need a physical testing ground that has cheap industrial land, a progressive local government willing to back experimental tech, and most importantly, millions of tons of agricultural waste.
And that takes us directly to the JUGO Topeka Small Business Incentive Program application detailed in the sources. Deer Reticular isn't just renting server space in the cloud. They're laying down physical concrete roots in the Midwest. They're setting up a physical office in downtown Topeka at a location called 712 Innovations, which also operates as Link Innovation Labs.
The grant application provides a really fascinating window into the physical reality of building a sovereign node. It outlines a total project budget of $90,000, with Deer Reticular putting up half, matched by a $45,000 grant from the local economic development group, JUGO Topeka.
Let's dig into those line items, because it's not just administrative overhead. This budget maps perfectly to the futuristic tech stack we just spent 20 minutes discussing.
It really does.
Let's look at the engineering challenges hidden in these numbers. First, there's $15,000 allocated for equipment. This specifically targets the purchase of high-density GPU edge compute nodes, notably NVIDIA H100 and L40S hardware modules.
Which is an incredible concentration of computing power. For context, the NVIDIA H100 is essentially the engine of the modern AI boom. It runs incredibly hot and requires immense power. But this equipment budget also explicitly includes the TPM 2.0 cryptographic hardware oracles and IoT microgrid telemetry controllers we discussed back in layer one.
Ah, so they're buying the literal hardware for the stack.
Yeah, they are building the physical bridge between the H100's calculations and the blockchain's ledger.
And they are putting these chips in a very unorthodox environment. Which brings us to the $10,000 allocated for construction and renovation. This isn't for drywall in a Downian office.
No, this is heavy industrial retrofitting. The budget is for isolation wiring, transformer stepping, advanced thermal ducting, and securing containerized housing at the Heartland Synergy Park at Forbes Field.
They're literally building high-performance AI data centers inside retrofitted shipping containers sitting on an old airfield.
Think about the thermal dynamics of putting high-density H100 chips inside a metal box during a Kansas summer.
It's an engineering nightmare.
Seriously, the engineering required to step down the voltage from a plasma gasifier directly into a server rack without frying the motherboards is immense. It's literally infrastructure in a box.
And that leads into the $10,000 allocated for the proof of concept phase. This is where the theory hits reality. This is the engineering budget required to successfully integrate the Prairie Band Ag Hemp Herd Biomass, the physical farm waste, into the plasma gasifiers, and then orchestrate that entire volatile physical process using the Rios AI software.
So they have to prove it actually works.
Exactly. They have to prove that the spark spread arbitrage actually works under real-world fluctuating conditions. And finally, $10,000 for global markets. This involves building B2B commercialization materials, establishing a trade show presence at regional ag tech expos, and building software demonstration portals. Why? Because if they can prove this works in Topeka, they can sell this sovereign compute node model as a turnkey solution to other agricultural cooperatives across North America.
The economic engine being built here for Shawnee County is just profound. Deer Reticular is taking raw agricultural waste, a byproduct that previously had minimal economic value, and transforming it through plasma gasification.
They are acting as an alchemist. They're turning dead stocks into high-value biochar and off-grid electricity. And then, crucially, they're using that electricity to run AI compute clusters.
Exactly. They are essentially monetizing local farm waste to import non-local technology revenues directly into the Shawnee County economy. When an AI startup in New York pays for compute power on the hyphenate, they are essentially sending capital to Topeka to pay for burning hemp stocks. It reverses the traditional extraction model of the tech industry.
And to manage this complex system, the application project is creating high-wage jobs, specifically software systems and AI operations roles, averaging $85,000 a year, right in the heartland. This isn't just a quirky tech experiment. It is rural economic development architecture in action.
But that ambition reveals a massive operational vulnerability for them.
Talent recruitment.
Precisely. Building world-class A2A orchestration software, managing zero-knowledge cryptographic escrows, and engineering the thermal dynamics of plasma gasifiers requires elite, top-tier software and systems engineering talent.
The kind of talent that is heavily concentrated in San Francisco, Seattle, or Austin. If you're dereticular, how on earth do you convince a senior systems architect to pack up their life in a coastal tech hub and move to Topeka, Kansas? You can't just rely on the work being interesting.
No, you have to offer a quality of life that fundamentally disrupts their current standard of living. And this is exactly why the Regional Recreation and Quality of Life Report was heavily featured in the source materials. For dereticular, the city's recreational footprint isn't just municipal trivia, it is a weaponized component of their talent recruitment strategy.
The concept of lifestyle arbitrage. Let's look at the psychology of a coastal developer right now. They might be making $180,000 a year, but they are paying $4,000 a month in rent for a one-bedroom apartment.
Right.
They commute 90 minutes each way in gridlock traffic. Their access to nature is fighting for a patch of grass in a crowded city park. They are structurally burned out.
And dereticular targets that exact burnout profile. The scale of the park system in Shawnee County offers a massive counterbalance. We are talking about a Parks and Recreation Department that manages 109 public parks, over 60 miles of interconnected trails, and over 1,100 acres of water systems.
Let's talk about the water, because that blew my mind. Lake Shawnee isn't just a municipal pond. It's a 416-acre lake situated within a massive 1,100-acre park visited by over 1 million people annually.
It features deep water infrastructure, a sailboard beach, a marina, and fishing docks that are actually heated so residents can fish year-round for bass and walleye, plus a 6.8-mile continuous concrete loop trail for distance running and road cycling.
Imagine the pitch to that burned-out coastal engineer. Like, we'll pay you an $85,000 salary, which goes incredibly far in the Midwest, and you'll have immediate access to deep water sailing and a marina just 10 minutes from the office.
Furthermore, the sources highlight Kaw River State Park. The strategic distinction here is that it is the only free urban state park in Kansas.
Oh, wow. Free urban state park.
Yeah. It features 76 acres of old-growth oak and hickory forest, steep elevation changes designed for single-track mountain biking, and a dedicated boat ramp that launches directly into the 170-mile Kansas River Water Trail.
And it connects right into McLennan Park and the Kansas Governor's Mansion, creating this massive, contiguous urban wilderness. Dereticular can offer these elite engineers access to incredible natural preserves and even deep water power boating at nearby Clinton and Perry Lakes, entirely without the crushing cost of living found in traditional tech hubs.
The lifestyle arbitrage is the hook. By leveraging free access to state parks and highly affordable municipal amenities, dereticular enhances employee wealth building in ways that coastal startups simply cannot match, no matter how much venture capital they raise. A lower salary in Topeka yields a demonstrably higher standard of living than a massive salary in Silicon Valley.
But retaining high-level talent isn't just about weekend excursions, right? It's not just about taking a boat out on Saturday. The real key to preventing developer burnout is daily wellness, culture, and active mobility. How do they live their lives Monday through Friday?
That is where the 60-mile interconnected trail system becomes critical to the operational strategy. The backbone of this network is the Shunga Urban Trail. It's a 13-mile paved multi-use spine that runs east-west right through the heart of Topeka.
It acts as an active mobility corridor, connecting residential neighborhoods directly to commercial hubs and urban parks. It connects seamlessly to cultural hotspots like the Netto Arts and Entertainment District in North Topeka, which has converted brick storefronts, local breweries, and massive First Friday art walks.
And downtown Evergy Plaza, which serves as a central outdoor gathering space with splash pads, outdoor cinema screens, and live concerts. Plus, massive historical parks like Gage Park, which holds the nationally accredited Topeka Zoo, the Kansas Children's Discovery Center, and an incredible 400-variety rose garden.
What I find so fascinating here is the contrast with traditional tech culture. The classic Silicon Valley model of talent retention is the trap campus. They build these claustrophobic corporate campuses with indoor rock walls, ping pong tables, free haircuts, and 3 catered meals a day.
Designed entirely to keep the employee from ever leaving the building.
Exactly. It's golden handcuffs designed to keep you at your desk for 14 hours a day. DeReticular is doing the exact opposite. Because their physical office is at 712 Innovations, located directly in downtown Topeka, it is plugged directly into those active mobility corridors.
The 60-mile trail system serves as their wellness program. It encourages employees to commute by bike from surrounding residential neighborhoods directly to the workplace downtown. This drastically improves daily physical and mental wellness. They don't need to build a corporate gym or an artificial climbing wall. They're leveraging an entire city's infrastructure and an urban state park to drive long-term employee retention.
It is a phenomenal synthesis of elements. When you pull it all together, the journey we just went on is mind-blowing. We started at the absolute digital frontier multi-agent systems, negotiating complex utility contracts in fractions of a second using cryptographic escrows and Bayesian probability.
And we grounded that digital complexity in physical reality. We saw how the severe bottleneck of the centralized power grid, the permitting wall, is forcing massive innovation towards spherical resilience and off-grid computing.
We look at how agricultural waste, specifically hemp herd from Midwestern farms, is being fed into plasma gasifiers in shipping containers at Forbes Field to run NVIDIA H100 GPUs, all orchestrated by bots performing real-time arbitrage on the spark spread, buying and selling power without human intervention, and dynamically load balancing with sovereign nodes in Uganda and Arizona.
And finally, we saw why this highly advanced futuristic ecosystem is being physically anchored in Topeka, Kansas. It's a perfect alignment of forward-thinking municipal grants, abundant agricultural resources, and an unparalleled outdoor lifestyle that serves as a strategic magnet for elite engineering talent.
It really is a masterclass in seeing the entire board, not just the individual pieces. It's not just about the code. It's about the energy, the hardware, the local community, and the psychology of the human beings writing that code.
Which brings up one final overarching implication of this technology. If A2A networks like DeReticular's Sovereign Stack mature and become the standard for global autonomous infrastructure, they will inherently, mathematically, always seek the path of least resistance for energy. They are designed to constantly hunt for the widest spark spread.
Right, because the Bayesian utility bots are literally programmed at their core to maximize efficiency and profit.
Exactly. So what happens 5 or 10 years from now when global AI networks autonomously start directing all human digital compute traffic exclusively to rural agricultural hubs simply because crop waste energy is cheaper and more readily available than traditional centralized grid energy?
Wow. I didn't even think about that.
Could the entire future of the global digital economy, the pacing of our artificial intelligence advancement, be dictated not by tech executives in Silicon Valley, but by the seasonal harvest cycles of Midwestern farms?
That is an incredible thought to leave you with. Imagine a world where the speed of our AI, the processing of our most advanced digital thoughts, depends entirely on how good the harvest was in Kansas that year. It completely flips our understanding of technology and nature on its head. Well, we have definitely given you a lot to process today on this deep dive, from agent-to-agent protocols and zero-knowledge proofs to plasma gasifiers and the Shunga Trail. Thank you so much for joining us on this exploration of DeReticular and the future of autonomous infrastructure. Keep digging, keep questioning, and we will see you on the next deep dive.